Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say preview show, where we're going to be previewing the visit of Swansea City to the Stadium of Light on Saturday. I am Richard Easterbrook, no Matthew tonight. It's been a very peaceful, quiet, serene week in the life of being a Sunderland fan. And to talk about it tonight, we've got Michael Luff. Hello, Michael. You all right?
Yep. Hi, Rick. Doing okay. What about yourself?
Really good. Got a dog. Another dog. Extra dog. Dog times two. So that's taken some adapting to.
Is it like a puppy yours that's like a exclusive. Bit older or?
Oh no, he's proper, he's brand new, straight out the factory. He's like factory. 8 weeks old. Yeah, he's still got that new car smell. Smell, he's got that all right. He's already christened the house. So yeah, it's all fun here.
Was it a purchase that was driven by you or?
Well, technically, I drove it from the place where we picked it up. But yeah, in terms of like driving the decision, no. I fully support it. I'm fully behind it. I sound like a counsellor talking about a leisure centre. No, I'm fully behind the proposals. But yeah, we've got a dog, so it's going to be fun and games.
Any SCFC theme in the name or?
Yes, inadvertently though. We had a kind of, you know, when you have to like look at the dog before you give it a name, because we had a list of names and I don't think this one appeared on it, but we've come up with Monty.
Wow, lovely stuff.
So hopefully he's going to be as good a goalkeeper. Well, it's not going to matter if he's a goalkeeper or not. He can't play for Sunderland unless they change the rules. So it's another mental week in the life of being a Sunderland supporter, isn't it? I mean, Michael Beale left on Monday. Was it Monday?
Yeah.
Was it Monday? Yeah, it was Monday, yeah. So we've got Mike Dodds now until the end of the season. Mick, you went on the pod on Monday with Gareth Stephen and Matt. So what's your views on it? Right decision?
Yeah, just a sense of kind of overwhelming relief, really, when I heard the news, because I was at both Huddersfield and Birmingham, and it was just such a regression. I mean, after the Plymouth game, I think it was a little bit of positivity and a bit of a sense of, right, okay, that's two wins in three, like three games unbeaten, like let's go and make it five now, let's go and beat Huddersfield, go and beat Birmingham, or even, you know, get a draw at Birmingham and beat Huddersfield or vice versa, but the performances were awful. We got no points out of those two games. And when you look at the fixtures we've got coming up, there's just no way we're going to survive that period. I mean, we might have got a win on Saturday because our home form's been okay. But beyond that, I just think his time was up. I mean, I think it probably was before the Stoke game, to be quite frank. But the time was up for him. He had to go as much for himself, really, because it was just such a hostile kind of environment. I don't mean as in like I blame the fans for that. I just mean in terms of like it's not very pleasant when obviously Beale hasn't built up that relationship and that rapport with the fans, and then the fans obviously don't like Michael Beale either. So it's just not nice really when you go to the match every week and you actively don't like your own manager, especially when you've had like Mowbray, who whatever his faults were on the pitch when we had him, I think he was like well liked by a large percentage of the fan base. So just as I say, for me, just really relieved that he went, and then obviously it happened really quickly. I mean, there was a rumours on Sunday night that it might happen, and then they were kind of quashed. So I'd kind of given up on it and just accepted he was going to be here for a while longer. And then looked at me before mid-afternoon on Monday, and Phil Smith was tweeting that he was gone. So as I say, it just feels like we've all been put out of our misery a lot sooner than what I anticipated, to be quite honest.
Yeah, no, I agree. The rumours that swirled around on Sunday seemed have so little basis to them. Like there wasn't a screenshot of a web page. It was like a picture taken of a web page, which nobody had heard of, a site that nobody had heard of, something like Football Fun or something like that. And it was like, yeah, this doesn't feel legit at all. But then it kind of started rumbling on Monday, didn't it? When there was a few kind of rumor mills going into action. I think it was a few respectable journalists started standing the story up, and it felt actually this could happen. But
I mean, it is also perfectly possible that when that rumor broke on Sunday night, that was incorrect at the time, and then it developed on Monday. But, you know,
they were right by accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It didn't, you know, his reign on Wearside did not start well. Couldn't have started any worse. And I don't think it's the fan reaction, as you say, I don't think it's the fan reaction that's led to this. And you've mentioned that regression in the football. And I think, you know, when the club are looking at data and they've used data as a reason for, you know, for sacking Tony Mowbray and also, you know, a couple of years ago sacking Lee Johnson, you could see it from a mile off, and it wasn't just the data, it was the eye test as well. The football had gone backwards, and it was like we were playing with the brakes on, and it was so turgid that we couldn't have gone on like that. And it was just, the decision had to be made. I'm actually quite surprised they made the decision that they did, but I'm glad we got there in the end.
Yeah. I do think as well, like when you've got a manager, I'm all for giving managers time, but equally managers have got to do things early on to earn that time. Because now, like football, like managerial reigns are so short anyway now compared to what they used to be, that to kind of like get over that initial sticky patch at the start, you've got to have something about you. So you've got to have personality. One, if the football's not good, you've got to have something to counterbalance that. Or if the football's not good, you need to be getting really good results. And then you think, right, okay, the results are there, even if the performances aren't. Or alternatively, if the results aren't quite there, you're like, right, okay, the results might not be there. However, we've been like playing good football. I can see what the process is. I can see what he's trying to achieve. I can see what a Michael Beale side will look like by the end of the season. But there was just nothing. Like up on every like key metric that you look for in a manager, he just hit none of the criteria that you would expect or hope for. And it's one of those things, like, I mean, people will turn around and say, and I've seen like a few people nationally and even some of our own fans say it, that, oh, well, he was never given a chance, Michael Beale. Like, I mean, that's just a load of rubbish, because if he'd come in played exciting, attractive football and got results, then of course we'd have been behind him, you know? I mean, that I remember when he first came in, like, we got beat off Coventry, that was horrible, obviously, and there was some, like, people chanting Tony Mowbray's name, but equally, we went a Hull a few days later, won 1-0, didn't play amazing, but played all right. And there was 2,500 fans down there going mental, really getting behind him, getting behind the team. And we saw as recently as the Plymouth game, people saying, right, he's starting to win me over now. He's starting to turn it around. But that was the thing under Beale. For every step forward, I feel like we made 3 steps back and there was a lack of ownership of it. And I think Beale himself didn't seem to think that the form was much of an issue. So like after the whole game, when he turned around and said like, oh, well, like some crisis, 9th in the league, 3 points off the playoffs. Well, it's now 7. And I just don't like that kind of talk anyway, because to be fair, the digs at the fan didn't really bother me all that much. Like, it is what it is. But what really did annoy me was the way he talked the club down. It was almost as if, like, by lowering expectations to absolutely kind of like to rock bottom, being slightly better than rock bottom was seen as some kind of achievement and progress. And that just isn't the way we can go on. So as I say, it's just like best for everybody that this failed experiment is over. And I don't think anybody is happy to turn around and say, I told you so, but we did all kind of tell you so, that this appointment was doomed to failure from the start.
Yeah, and it was. And I know other managers have got track records that they can bring in, and it does kind of help a little bit. Michael Beale didn't really have that. Another point or two, his win percentage in Glasgow, well, it didn't really equate to much. He was always on a hide and nothing, and he needed to excel in other departments. It's maybe not something you need to look for in a manager, but I think you need to be a little bit more. He needed to work a little harder to kind of endear himself to the fans. I'm not talking about, coming in wearing a red and white shirt and holding the copy of the Macam dictionary and chewing on a pink slice or whatever the Macam stereotype is. But he didn't do anything to endear himself to the fans. It's not because of his accent. It was just because it was quite a cold approach. It was very distant, withdrawn. And I never felt, that's it, you've got to feel something in a manager, and he just didn't feel it. He could have been the coldest man in the world. If he'd got results, it would have been a different matter, but that whole package was just not going to work out.
Yeah, completely. And as we've discussed before, when we sacked Mowbray, we sent out a clear message saying, right, what he was achieving wasn't good enough, so if you don't improve on that, you're open to scrutiny straight away. Because the idea of bringing in the next head coach or manager is to clearly draw a line in the sand and say, right, but now we need to progress. And this guy, I believe, is going to take us higher in the league and give us a better chance of making the playoff places. And that simply hasn't happened. As you say, it's been a regression in terms of the playing style. The results haven't improved. They might not have regressed, but they certainly haven't improved. It's just, as I say, it's just felt like a real mess. I just don't think all the off the pitch stuff since Bale's come for clubs helped either. Obviously, the Newcastle game and everything that surrounded that was very difficult for any manager to walk into. But again, you don't help yourself by setting up really meekly in that game and then coming out afterwards and saying, oh, well, some of these young players think we're going to play in the Premier League. Well, not on that evidence today. And it was just everything about them just seemed a bit edgy and confrontational, like what he said about Oushish after the Ipswich game. It's just been a general theme of absolving himself of the blame and almost pinned it all on these young players. But in the same breath, we can't criticise him because it affects a player's confidence. Well, you can't have it both ways. So I just think, again, I don't want to keep harping on about Mowbray because actually, although I really like Mowbray, it did go stale towards the end and I wasn't necessarily against him being sacked if you were going to bring him better. But when Mowbray was so good with the players, they all buzzed off him. When we won a game and you got interviewed, they couldn't speak highly enough of him. You've seen when he's unfortunately got that illness, Mowbray, the players on Instagram straight away calling him gaffer and wishing him all the best on the same day that Bale's been sacked. It's just, as I say, there was just absolutely nothing really from his reign to look back on fondly, unfortunately, because as I've stated numerous times, I'd have absolutely would have loved to have had egg on my face and at the end of the season being like, oh, what a great appointment that was, and I was wrong. But unfortunately, as Chris Coleman always used to say, we are where we are and we've just got to try and make the best of the rest of this season.
Well, that's it. We've got 13 games left of the season now. So we're sitting 10th with 47 points, so 7 points off a playoff berth. Do you think Mike Dodds is... Do you think he's able to get us into that position? I know we've been here before. We're here in this exact same spot this time last year, but it was a different landscape then. Do you think we can do it?
In a word, no. to be quite honest, especially with the news today that's come out about Jack Clark's injury. I still think. Obviously, we'll talk a lot more about Swansea specifically later, but I do think we'll still beat Swansea because they have been very inconsistent. Since the new manager's come in, there hasn't been a big uptick. They play quite open football, and that's we kind of thrive against teams that come out and try and have a go against us so we can exploit the spaces. But beyond that, is it still Sheffield Wednesday the last time we scored a goal away from home that wasn't Jack Clark?
Was Borough.
Oh, of course, Rusin, but it still kind of puts one goal.
That's the one, yeah.
it's one goal. So, and especially the quality of sides we're playing. We've got to travel to Norwich and Southampton without him. We've got Leicester at home without Jack Clark. And they're just But I'm not saying it's an insurmountable task, because Sunderland at this level, I don't think we should ever kind of reduce ourselves to saying that. But equally, it's a very, very tall order, and it's not inconceivable we come out of that run of games against Leicester, Norwich and Southampton with like maybe 0 points, 1.2, if you can, you know what I mean? It'll be, I hope I'm proven wrong, but it's a very tough run of games. And actually, I think that might be a factor in trying not to get a manager. Obviously, I know Mike Dodds being given it on an interim basis, but not going out and getting the manager to tide you up at the end of the season, because I think if they came in, you're on a hide and nothing straight away if we had a poor return out of them few games. Yeah. So the Dodds thing, it does kind of make sense to us. It's making the best of a bad situation, but it's not ideal. And I think the benchmark now for Mike Dodds is to do what he does best, develop young players, produce some attractive football, set us up well tactically, because even though I've kind of have written the season off in terms of playoff qualification, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy going to the match still. And that's what I think Dodds' role is between now and the end of the season, is to give us some good quality football on the pitch, give us something to get behind. And as I say, if we ultimately don't get there, that's fair enough. But between now and the end of the season, I want to kind of like start enjoying the experience of being a Sunderland fan again, because I think since Beale came in, I've lost that to a large extent, which is a shame, because prior to that, I think I've never been more on board with the club for years.
Yeah, and well, you know, when you talk about pressure, Tony Mowbray did a great job last season of lifting the pressure off the players. I know he kind of said himself that, you know, we're not looking at the playoffs. And I know a lot of fans kind of got a little bit angry about it, but it did a great job in just lifting that pressure off the players. And once you lift the pressure off, you see the performances coming in. And we're in the same spot now. The pressure's off. I mean, the sides above us, you know, we're in 10th. We've got Preston, Norwich, Coventry in between us and Hull City in 6th. All of the sides above us are putting runs together and have been consistent in their last 5, where, you know, we're on the back of 2 defeats. And it's going to be a tall order, as you say, with difficult away trips to come. It is going to be a tall order, but I'm not going to write it off just yet, because I've seen where we did last season with the, you know, it was a 3% chance of us getting into the playoffs at one point last season. I think that was after the Stoke defeat, or perhaps a Luton draw. There was still like single digit percentage chance of us getting in at halftime at Preston. I think there was a 0% chance of us getting into the playoffs. So I'm not going to write it off. I'd love to see it happen. I don't think it will in my heart of hearts, but I am looking forward to seeing what Mike Dodds can do with this team in terms of getting back to somewhere near how we're playing when it was good under Mowbray. So that's front foot attacking football. And I think the main problem with Michael Beale was that he was training them, because for a man who loves training, he was training them into being like second guessing themselves almost. You could see them kind of, the amount of times you'd see kind of Hume wanting to make a run around the outside and not holding his run, like holding his run and just not pressing, you know, when the attack was coming in, and not kind of overcommitting. And it was just all very safe and all very kind of turgid. So I kind of want to see maybe the handbrake let off one or two notches on Saturday, starting with Swansea City.
Yeah, I mean, before the news about Jack Clark broke, I kind of was expecting us to, I'm not even exaggerating, kind of like 3 or 4 nil job on Saturday, purely because I think like we'll just be a big cloud kind of lifted from over the whole club, and the players will feel that bit more freedom. And I hope they do. And as I say, I think we'll beat Swansea. But in terms of my Dodds, like what I just said there, it's not a slight on him at all. I mean, he showed against Leeds that he's got like a great deal of tactical sophistication in terms of how he can set a team up. And they followed it absolutely to the letter. And it wouldn't surprise me, might be slightly contradict myself, but it wouldn't surprise us if we did go and get one result out of them 3 games because of how like tactically excellent he was against Leeds. And if he can replicate that, happy days. But it's just like you say, it's a case of like he needs to bring back that bit of like kind of like free-flowing football and that fluidity, because as you pointed out, that is what we've seriously lacked in recent weeks, because like there was a lot of off-the-cuff football that we played before Beale came in.
Like instinctive
Yeah, instinctive, and some of the goals we scored. But again, this season, we don't have Ahmad to stitch that together. We haven't had Patrick Roberts in the form he was in last season. And like we've been solely reliant upon Jack Clark. And unfortunately, I mean, even to the point where I know he wasn't great here, but some people, I know Roos and I do quite like him as well. He's busy, he's energetic, he scored a couple of goals. But if Joe Gellert walked into the dressing room right now, he would be the best striker at the club. And that's just a sad indictment of how the squad's regressed from where we were last season. And we've got, and not only have we got the issue of Jack Clark being injured, we've got the issue we now have in the back four, where we have the potential injury to Hyelda. He's potentially injured. Ballard suspended. Luke O'Nine's walking a disciplinary tightrope where if he gets one more boot, and I think he's banned for two games.
So it's a proper journal phrase, that, isn't it? Walking a disciplinary tightrope.
It is. It's been a long time since I was journal shirted, but it's still in there.
Oh, it's still in there. You never lose it.
Never lose this. I'll have to iron the journal shirt again so I can keep on coming out of this. So potentially we could, again, because I don't get this obsession with these three games, but we could be going into them without Ballard and 09. And then you think, all right, put Hyelda and Zeal in the two centre-half positions, but then where's your fullbacks because they're all injured? Like, it is really difficult. Obviously, Pembele, I know he can come in, but to be quite honest, he's looked well off it when he's played so far. He came very highly rated. He had a successful loan spell in Ligue 1, so in theory, despite his injury, he should have been the most first-team ready signing that we arguably made all last summer, and he's just looked a mile off every time I've seen him play. So to put him into three games against some of the best sides in the league will be really tough. So I just pray that Luke O'Nine manages to remain on the kind of the good side of the referees for once and avoid picking up a boot, and at least until Ballard's back in the side, because as I say, things at the minute, it just seems like we can't catch a break and things are unraveling quite quickly, and hopefully we can address that.
Yeah, we're in the realms now of keeping Twitter on the screen just in case something else bad happens. So, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back after and talk about the visit of Swansea and how Sunderland will line up with the injuries and the suspensions that we're dealing with. Welcome back to the Wise Men Say preview show. On Saturday, Sunderland host Swansea City in the AFL Championship. Two wins in 2024 for the Swans, with their newly crowned manager Luke Williams who did such a good job at Notts County, hasn't really got them firing yet. They're 18th in the Championship, and last time out against us, we had that 0-0 back in November, didn't we? So what kind of a challenge are you expecting from the Swans on Saturday?
Like I keep saying, I do think we'll win the game, because I think Swansea they've been very patchy recently in terms of form. Like, I think we've taken some quite heavy defeats. I remember watching them. I know Bournemouth from a higher league, but I watched them get beat 5-0 off Bournemouth. They might have even been 4 or 5 at half time. But he's very much a Swansea appointment, isn't he, the manager, Luke Williams, because they're very much like a process club in terms of how they want to play. And then they had a brief departure for that in Michael Duff, but they've gone straight back to a manager who I think he very much sticks to his guns and right, this is the way I want to play. And it's kind of Swansea have developed that style over the years. So Swansea will come and try and give us a game, I think. I don't think we're going to try and sit in, and so there will be gaps there to exploit. In terms of the threat I expect from Swansea, I'm no expert in their kind of place, to be quite honest. But I'm just expecting it to be quite an open game. And even with Clark being out, I still think we can outgun them. So it's hopefully we can, as I say, lift a bit of a cloud the weekend to get 3 points on the board.
Yeah, Luke Williams, he didn't get enough credit for what he did at Notts County, considering they finished second to an incredibly well-funded Wrexham side. You know, to get north of 100 points and to give them such a close run, you know, it was live right up until penultimate game of the season, pretty much for him to kind of pull that off without that much backing, without the backing that Wrexham had, certainly.
Yeah,
you know, he deserves this move, but it hasn't hasn't really set South Wales alight so far. But I mean, there wasn't the league position 18th. Yeah, expect a little more. If we lose to them on Saturday, we'll have lost as many games as they have this season, and they're in 18th, and we're 11 points, you know, clear of them. So, do you think it'll be a close run thing between us?
Yeah, I do think it will be. I mean, as I say, if we had Clark, I'd be pretty confident we'd win comfortably. But I can see probably it will be a close game. I think it'll be I can see it being a few goals. Could be 2-1, 3-2 job, but I do think we will edge it. In terms of Sunderland, though, we've got quite a few that selection headaches, don't we, as we alluded to before the break,
yeah.
In terms of what you go with. I mean, if we had a centre forward that I could trust other than Rusin, I would actually be very intrigued to see what Rusin is playing from a wide forward role. Because a lot of people have said that that was his position really before he came to England. And I know it's under 21s football, so you can't read too much into it, but when I watched our 21s against Leeds the other week, he played from the wide position and he scored 2 goals and he looked really, really good from there. So I would be interested to see what he's like. However, I would obviously like to see Rusin be given the run on the side up front. So I think we will just have to go with Mundell and Barr. But it's a shame that I don't think we will get to see Rusin playing from that wide position, because I think he could be a real threat.
Yeah, no, I've said it on a previous show a few weeks ago. I'd like to see Job go through the middle as a central striker. Or a false nine, but most of our strikers seem to be false nines because they don't do the job of a number nine. If we stick Job up there and put Rusin on the right and Mundell on the left with Barr in the 10, I think that there's something in that. I've quite liked Barr when he's played through the middle. You know, he's shown glimmers of quality, and as you say, I think Rusin is a. He's not someone who's usually gonna sit on the shoulder of the centre half. He's the one who's gonna sit wide. I think starting out wide and coming inside, he's got more about him then. And I know one of Beale's comments was that's his position, isn't he, playing as a wide forward? So if he's thinking that, you know, I think that's where he played when he played for in the Ukraine League. Give him a run there. See what you can do. I think Job has the attributes of a centre forward, and if he's given that license to, you know, to stay up rather than kind of play too deep, I think there's something in that as well. And then you can have Dan Neil and Pierre Ekwa sitting behind the four. I think there's a bit of balance in there. Obviously, the big news is as Michael says, we're likely to not have Jack Clark on Saturday. Not sure of the specifics of the injury, but there's talk about it being ankle, not both ankles, just one ankle, and then that he could be out, you know, for up to a month perhaps. So hopefully, you know, it's not going to be that long. But that certainly sounds like the worst case scenario. So that's a pretty big hammer blow to lose. Not just Jack Clark, who's your biggest contributor to the side, but Patrick Roberts as well. He's out for an extended period of time. It seems that stockpiling wingers was probably a good idea in the end, wasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you could even you could even see Alshish come back into the fold at the weekend. You never know.
Yeah.
Because I know he wasn't playing great, but we've got such I don't know why the words escape me for not having a lot of things. We've got such few options, really, in attacking areas now, in the number 10 role, that I think he's worth a go because he did show some promise, particularly when he came off the bench earlier on in the season. So I could see him coming back into the team. You shouted Bellingham up front, possibly. I mean, Mike Dodds did go with Bellingham, didn't he, when he was in temporary charge before Christmas?
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah,
that would be interesting.
There's also, you know, there's Chris Rigg as well. He was he was kind of getting more minutes, and I think this could be a good opportunity for him. So if you want to make the best out of it, you've got to look at it as an opportunity for players who weren't getting minutes to step up. But it is really a terrible situation. We shouldn't be delighted about the fact that we're going to hang our hat on a 16-year-old to get more minutes. But this is the reality of where we are. It's, you know, we can't be dancing on the streets about it, but it's an opportunity for the likes of Chris Rigg to state a claim. And we know he's got quality. You know, this could be a great chance for him. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of players around him that are thinking the same thing, even down to the likes of, you know, Tommy Watson, who hasn't had much opportunities, but he's been in and around the match day 18. So, you know, it's a lot of the younger players who haven't had minutes under the belt will be thinking that as an opportunity there.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think as well, it is quite telling now, like how weak our bench is looking at times, and we're down to like, we are really down to bare bones at the minute compared to just even like a month ago in terms of the depth that we had. So, like you say, like Paddy Roberts, I know he's not set the world alight this season, but he's still an exciting player. He still creates things. He still, like, gets a crowd on the feet. He like drives at players. So to not even have him as an option coming off the bench, it's just not ideal at all. And Chris Rigg, I think that would be not a bad shout at all. I think if there is a game that he is going to start, it's certainly not going to be the next three games. So I wouldn't be against him getting the start neither at the weekend if that was how it was going to be. If we did go to a bit more of a flat three that we've seen recently, I wouldn't be all that against having Rigg, Neil and Ekwar as like the midfield three. I wouldn't be against that at all. Because this is the thing as well, like, I mean, like Joe Bellingham, he's only a couple of years older than Rigg, and we talk about him as if like he must start every game, but obviously we saw the impact he had off the bench against Plymouth. So again, like him like coming off the bench, because he started against Huddersfield and he started against Birmingham, so possibly to see him coming off the bench again, that means that like Rigg's got the safety blanket as well of right after 60 minutes we're pulling you and we're putting Joe on.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely an option we could see, because Rigg, to be fair to him, when he has played, he's not looked out of place at all, and he's like very brave on the ball. He wants to get on it. He drives us forward. He's a very combative player. So I wouldn't be against giving him a go at all. And to be quite frank, at this stage of the season, like, yes, we are still in contention, but if it does come to a stage later on towards the back end where you're looking at it thinking, we're just like nearly mathematically can't make the playoffs, then like I would expect to see Rigg start games frequently, to be honest, towards the end of the season.
Yeah, that's a good point. Defensively, as you've alluded to, we're not going to have Dan Ballard because he's going to be suspended. There's a chance that Hjelde might be injured. So what changes would you make at the back to stave off Swansea's threat on Saturday?
I mean, as I say, ideally Hjelde will be available, and that's it, then the rest of the back four speaks for itself, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So you might have a situation where forgive me if there's a player that's available who I can't remember, but I think we will literally be down there. We'll have to play Hume at left back and we'll have to play Pembele at right back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zeal at centre half.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to wrap my brains to think of like anybody, but like, no, we've just got like 1,000 full backs injured, haven't we? Like Huggins, Certain, Elise, like we've got no options.
Yeah, unless you go like to kind of under 23s that haven't had many minutes at all.
I
think that's a risk. I'd rather put four players in that have had some minutes this season.
Oh no! I mean, this is the thing. We shouldn't be talking about that when we've got like we've signed a right back from one of the biggest clubs in world football in the summer. We shouldn't be talking about like, oh well, you know, could another 23 player come in so he doesn't play? Like, he should be ready, but from the evidence I've seen, he doesn't look it. So, but one way or another, he's gonna probably get a couple of games in the side. So as I say, I am really, really hoping that Hjelde will be fit, because he's at least shown some degree of competency in his cameos. He played full games, but in his like few games for the club.
Yeah, he's looked okay. He hasn't set the world alight, but you know, he's got that experience, and he's got something about him. Like, he's, you know, I know he's not your classic fullback in that he does often look like a centre half playing left back, but he brings balance having that left foot. he brings balance and he's looked okay. So hopefully we'll be fit. So that Hume can play right back and Jensen Seelt will take Dan Ballard's place. And it actually stick Seelt up front. If you saw his goal that he scored in training, incredible finish. They could absolutely be what we're missing.
Although I think on the back of that goal, I'm going to have to go and get my eyes tested because I just looked it on my phone briefly when I was on my way home from work and I saw like the back heel and it looked really good. But I'm like, why is everyone going on like that? He's put it wide. And then like, when I watched it back properly, I was like, oh no, that has absolutely gone in.
Yeah. There's only one player that I ever see like celebrating goals in training, and that's Luke 09. Everyone else just acts like, I mean, I don't sound like Roy Keane, but they act like it's their job.
Well, yeah, it's training. It's a bit like if you play five-sided.
I celebrate goals on five-sided.
You give it a little fist pump, run back, high-five your mate on the way back maybe, but you're not telling me you could do like full of like run to the corner. Like
knee slides. I wish I would. Well, I'd never score enough goals in five-a-side anyway. But the ones that did go in, I would wheel away one arm in the air. But that's just me. That, because of such a collector's item. But I think if I'd scored a goal like that in training, I'd probably make more of it than just trotting back to my position. I'd be giving it biggins.
No, I'd firmly do the sale thing of like, yeah, what? I do it all the time. Like,
Yeah. No, that's obviously like you've got much more of a, you know, high performance culture than I do, and obviously you're a bit better at football than me. I think you'd agree with that. I think
that's an all like. I mean, no, necessarily.
I've rarely set goals alight.
I mean, you might get arrested for that, like, but wait.
Once headbutted the wall in goals in Middlesbrough. Gave myself concussion.
I think the thing with me when
I slipped and cracked me head off the wall while retrieving the ball, like slipped forward. Yeah, got me. Had to cover a match later on, and I missed like the first 10 minutes because I was late, and I had no idea what was going on in the game. I had to keep asking people what score was. So, it was the 0-0 draw with Man United. When the lunchtime kickoff. I don't know why I played football before. That was a daft idea.
But again, I think that's quite incredible. I kept having to ask for a score. It was a 0-0 draw.
Who scored there? It's still 0-0, Richard. Yeah. So, yeah. What we got now? We've had a few questions from the listeners. Actually, Zomik, what's your score prediction then?
Oh, we're doing scores before the questions.
If scores before questions, because we're moving away from, I think we're moving away from the Swansea game, aren't we, for the questions?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fine. Right. Yeah, I'll go, what I said earlier, 2-1.
Right. I'm going to go 3-1.
I'm going to go for Rusin's going to score and Mundo's going to get the winger. The winner, because he's a winger. I got that a bit confused, but he's going to get the winner.
Mundo, the winger, is going to get the winner.
Yeah.
Great. No, I agree we're going to win. I think we're going to win 3-1. And I think it's going to be a champagne start to the game. We're going to go into an early 2-0 lead. They're going to pull it back just after halftime. They're going to pull it back to 2-1. And we're going to put the icing on the cake. Chris Frigg with a late header to send us all home happy. That's how I see it. So we've been asking for a few questions on X earlier. So we've had a couple of questions. First one up is from John G. Is there any merit in the fans groups and podcasts uniting and urging the fans to hold off renewing their season tickets? Owners only understand pounds, and we're still waiting for answers about the Mags debacle and the off-field matters and the on-field matters have dropped off. I think, well, before coming to you, Mick, I think if we're talking about clubbing together to tell people not to buy season tickets, I don't think personally I would stand with that, because if you don't want to buy a season ticket, that's your choice. It's such a huge decision for people to take, huge financial contribution to make. It's your decision at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I would also be an enormous hypocrite about that, because my kind of stance is like, yeah, like I obviously love Sunderland. I love watching football, but equally, like it's about all about the day for me. And like obviously, like I've still got my season ticket with my dad. Like it's like because like I live like an hour away from my parents. Like so, it's kind of like once a week. I'll say like my dad will go for a few beers and go to the match. It's like quite a special thing still. So it, I couldn't, in good faith, encourage other people not to renew while knowing deep down, I would renew no matter what, like no matter like how low we sunk. And that's not me saying, oh, I'm a good class fan. That's just me saying, like for me, like there's about so much more than the football and so much more than like the ownership and whatever gripes you have with the club. And I think also as well, you've got to be a little bit careful with going down the route of like getting like everybody together, because the beauty of like kind of like the fanzines and all the fan groups is we all will, even within the fan groups, have like different opinions on things and like
see
the ownership differently and stuff like that. Never mind trying to get people from different fan groups who will again see things slightly differently to try and get together. I mean, the theory of it like is quite sound. And there's a look, we always get like slated for being like negative and for kind of like holding the cup account a bit too much sometimes. And we've obviously had our say on like Kevin Louis-Dreyfus and like the run of the club, but I just, as I say, I just don't think in good faith I could like encourage people not to renew the season tickets.
Yeah, I mean, as fan groups, we have United on stuff that's probably a little bigger than this, and you know, as you say, we all have different opinions. You know, we all have, you know, quite, you know, not big arguments on match days, but we've often had, not come to blows either, but we've often had like words with each other on match days and not agreed, not seen eye to eye with each other on lots of things. But on the big stuff, yeah, we generally hold the same opinion. You know, giving Newcastle United 6,000 tickets was a bad idea. But are we going to march with pitchforks on Black Hat House? Probably not. But, you know, the season card decision and early bird renewals will start to be going out probably in the next month or so, you'd imagine. That's entirely your decision, I think.
And I think
the football's such a small part of the day as well, as you say, Mick. It's like it's a tiny part of the day. And I don't think I think I'd be cutting my nose off to spite my face if I just didn't get a season ticket. I'd be missing out on quite a big social thing. I wouldn't myself.
I do think as well that these things happen organically. So I do think next season, I do think we'll see a reduction in renewals purely because of especially if like we don't have a good spell coming up and the club look a bit directionless, and you know what I mean? Like, so I know like I don't want to make it sound like it's an obsession of mine, but I keep harking back to the days of when we won the league and we were averaging like high 28, low 30,000. You know, there's sometimes things happen around the football club that causes that drop off in renewals and kind of like your hardcore support shrinks organically. So I don't think there's like a huge need for it, because I do think there will be people on an individual basis and on like a family basis and a mates basis saying like, no, I don't want to go and watch us be also runs in the second tier of English football. And that's absolutely sound.
Yeah, no, I agree. Another question from Gibbo. How likely do we all feel that if Dodsley has a successful end of the season, finishing seventh or losing out in the playoffs, playing exciting attacking football, getting the feel-good factor back to the club, that we see him giving it permanently? Especially given the addition of the first team coach, Anthony Hayes, who's worked with Mike Dodds before today. So how likely do you think it is that Dodds would be given the job permanently should he achieve all of those things?
I think there would be a high chance if he hit those objectives, there would be a high chance that he would get it. I really do. Now, there's two ways of looking at it. You could say, oh, well, that suits the club down the grounds. It means that we could, like, obviously do it on the cheap, et cetera, et cetera. But you could also look at it and say, right, okay, this is a coach who the club have, like, invested in, and he's come through, and he's kind of, like, taken, and he was a big part of, obviously, the really good football we played last season. So if he shows signs that he can be a charismatic leader, that he can, like, execute tactical game plans over a much bigger sample size than what we've seen earlier, then really it's not a bad thing to promote from within necessarily.
Yeah.
However, despite me saying that, I personally wouldn't like to see him be given the job, because I think we've seen it all too often where a temporary manager can have a really successful half season and then they get a gig on a more permanent basis and you're just looking for another new manager in October And because you've given them full time, that means he's out the door and we've lost a very talented coach. So I would be, I would personally be quite wary of it. I would like us to, obviously, if we get in the playoffs and we get promoted, then you can't not give him the job. But I would say, like, barring kind of a bit of a miracle, I would like to see us go out there and make like a bit of a statement, like ambitious appointment to reassure people, like kind of that we are serious about like getting out of this league at the nearest opportunity.
I think that's the club's thoughts behind it as well. Had they thought that you know, Dodds was going to be a huge success and would get us up to the Premier League, they wouldn't have hesitated at all in giving him the job after Tony Mowbray had left. But because they value him as an employee of the club and they value him as a coach, they didn't want to see him fail and then haven't been given the job until the end of the season, then that would make, he couldn't just go back to being an assistant to head coach, whoever his job was before. So it's almost like what Graham Murty did up at Rangers. Ironically, he kind of went out on first team matters and then crashed and burned, but then got a job back within the club. I'd feel that a lot of the times you don't see that happening, do you? You kind of see caretakers given the job, like kind of a Craig Shakespeare kind of thing, who'd been a long-time lieutenant and then get the job, doesn't quite work out for them, and they end up losing out on a coach. So yeah, I agree with you on that. I think I'd like to see him do well. And if he does well, he'll deserve to get the job full-time. But if he just misses out and then feels that maybe he's got the taste of being a manager and leaves the club, we've lost out big time then. The final question is from A, which is a catchy name. Is the recent criticism of Anthony Patterson, which is online, warranted or harsh? Now, disclaimer, because I've come off Twitter, I haven't seen any of this. So you're going to have to fill me in on this, Mick.
Yeah, I think not just online as well, to be fair. I think there is a sentiment, and quite rightly, for Patterson has been at fault or at least partially to blame for some of the goals we've conceded recently. I've got two kind of thoughts on it. So what I don't like is when I see people saying that, like, oh, well, this is why we need a better second choice keeper, because Patterson clearly doesn't feel threatened, therefore like he's got complacent. I think that's like just nonsense, because Patterson, I don't think, needs the kind of like motivation of like, if I don't have somebody kicking me up the backside, I'm just going to slack off and train and I'm not going to give me all for the club. I don't like that. But where I do agree with him is that we do need a better second choice goalkeeper, because that means when your number one has a poor run of form, you can just put another goalkeeper in and be like, right, okay, we're taking you out the firing line for a little bit. Here's somebody who we trust 100% to go in and play regularly for the club while we kind of like get your form back to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think kind of the criticism has been warranted, and I think it's a worry that we don't, this is the second year in a row now, we've not got a goalkeeper who we can confidently say we could put him in tomorrow and he would like excel or even be competent at this level. Like Nathan Bishop, he came from Man United, fair enough, but I think the highest he's ever played, he played a full season for Mansfield in League Two, and I think he played for Southend briefly, like when they were in League One under Sol Campbell. So he's got no pedigree at this level. So I just think we've sold ourselves short. And I know it is very difficult to recruit a second-choice keeper who is happy to kind of be on the bench most of the time, but is also good enough to step up. I do understand it, but equally, I do kind of like feel as if, we're selling ourselves short. And Patterson, I think he is like exposed, because don't forget, like this is only like 2 or 3 years now he's had of like senior football. And I think we've seen a non-stop rise ever since he's come into the team in terms of his performances. And this is the first serious dip for me. So yeah, we need to get behind him and support him. But as I say, I don't think he's necessarily got the back up there to give him the kind of like the almost a breathing space to just be human and make these errors without it being too costly.
Yeah, I think it's his second full, a lot like Dan Neil, it's his second full season, you know, in a starting role. And you've seen how he's come on from, you know, from where he started off when he came back from that loan at Notts County in League One, and then he really kind of, you know, he hit form incredibly for the playoffs. You know, he played so ever so well down at Wembley against Wickham, and he just seemed to have kicked on from there. And this is probably the first plateau he's seeing. And you're going to expect that from a goalkeeper, especially, you know, of such a young age. And yeah, I think he would probably say himself if he had a, if he had someone underneath him that was pushing him a little closer, or someone that he could learn off a little better. One thing I do notice about Bishop is that he's a massive cheerleader for Patterson. If you ever see them warming up before a match, because they warm up right in front of me in the north stand, and he's always like applauding him every time he makes a decent save. He's like first to kind of pat him on the back and stuff. He seems quite good in that respect. So maybe, you know, he's pushing him in a different way. He's being more supportive rather than like, I'm going to take your place.
Yeah, I mean, when he left Man United, there was like Bruno Fernandes and people like that who were like saying, oh, you'll never meet like a better guy than Nathan Bishop, like posting on their Instagram and stuff. Mm. So it just goes to show. And I think I've noticed this, like when we've won, he's like going around applauding the fans. He's quite involved in the celebrations. I remember when Dewey did that cross for Chris Rigg in against Southampton. After the game, he was going to both like Burnett and like Rigg and like hugging them and like making a big fuss over it. So, as I say, I don't doubt he's an absolutely brilliant guy, but in terms of like when we can step up and play for us in the Championship, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Maybe he should be our next manager. Just a stunned silence from Mick there. Well, on that bombshell, I think that's about it. We'll be back after the match on Saturday with the reaction pod, and then Gareth and Stephen will be back on Monday to talk more about the game at the weekend and anything else that might have happened. Whatever, you know, we're talking disasters here because we seem to be in the realms of big news happening in Sunderland. So we might be back with an emergency pod to say the stadium of light has melted. So we'll find out. But until then, thank you very much for listening.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.